All right. Well, some of you have heard series on parenting before. Some of you have heard it from me before, and that's okay. There's others of you who have not heard these series, and this will be a good experience, I hope, for you. There's some reasons for lessons like this. First of all, we parents and grandparents can always use a refresher on why parenting is important, what methods, principles, strategies, etc. we can employ as parents. And honestly, it doesn't matter if the kids hear it. And in a lot of respects, I think it's good if the kids do hear it so that they can see that we're all trying to do the same thing. Young families in particular need counseling and advice. Whether they accept it or not, that's up to them, but they need it. And none of us are born expert parents. Many of us have had poor role models at home growing up, so we didn't have the advantage of a good Christian home in that respect. As single parenting statistics increase, and they are increasing, grandparents find themselves virtually raising their grandchildren, not just seeing them on an occasional visit, but rather deeply involved in their grandchildren's lives and as a governing authority. So this is a good series for grandparents in that respect. Parenting is a primary factor in molding any child's future, including how you value yourself as a person, how you value other people, your respect for authority, especially the authority of God and His Word, your sense of purpose in life. You're not going to get all that from the schools. You're not going to get all that from a secular society, but you will get that here, and you will get that from God's Word. And parents are to communicate those things. Parents who are committed to God and His Word do have a moral obligation to train their children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And we will answer to God, of course, if we refuse to do that or if we neglect to do that. So there's some really good reasons why we want to get into this series and why we want to discuss these things. Someone might say, well, I'm already a good parent, so what's the point? Well, if you are a good parent, excellent. Continue to remain a good parent. But at the same time, recognize this, and not everyone measures good by God's standard. Someone might say, I have a good marriage, but if your marriage is not based upon godly principles and godly standards and the actual explicit instructions that God gives both husbands and wives, well, it remains your opinion that your marriage is good and not a fact. Now, I just want you to think about what I just said. We're not here to uphold your opinion about yourself. We're here to understand what is the fact about your situation, whatever it is, marriage, parenting, even as a Christian. What are the facts? What does the evidence say? Some of you are far better and more experienced parents than I am. My hat off to you. I respect you for what you have and what you've done. But someone has to say something. And as I said last week, this series is intended to help, to advise, to clarify, and yes, to warn. And so I hope that you take what I say here, even in this lesson, in the spirit in which it was intended. You should know that parenting has a powerful influence on how the world will be in the coming generations. What we're seeing right now in our society, all the problems, the rebellion, the lack of respect, the lack of reverence, it can all come back to the lack of good, solid Christian parenting. Think about that. If we had had good, sound parenting in the past, our society would not look like it does right now. And so I just want you to see that parenting has a powerful influence on how the world not just is, but how it will be. If enough parents train their children to honor and respect God, imagine what kind of world we could have. Just imagine that. And at the same time, if parents teach their children to be selfish and immoral and to sneer at God and His Word, just imagine what kind of world we're going to be looking at in the generation to come. We Christians would like to think that the church of tomorrow is already being groomed in the homes of Christian believers today. Sometimes that is true, and yet it is not always true. And I want to give you some reasons why that is not true. The statistics and simple observation proves otherwise. There is a greater number of children leaving behind their parents' religious values than they are embracing them. Not all of this is due to poor parenting, but there are some frightening numbers out there nonetheless. The most conservative numbers, and this is consistent for the last 20 years since I've been looking at these numbers, consistently 80% is a very conservative figure of the number of children who leave the religion that they were conditioned with, if you will, when they were at home. They leave that religion behind and usually end up becoming atheist or irreligious or just, you know, non-spiritual. 80%. That means if we were to stand up here, 10 children of this congregation, 10 children of families of this group, 8 of those children statistically will not be following this religion in their adult years. And that doesn't mean that that's true all the time, but statistically, that is what we're looking at. Parents today, even Christian parents, are often too busy, too distracted to provide a level of teaching and mentoring that their children do require. The sad part there is that much of too busy is self-inflicted. We clutter our lives and our schedules with things that really don't have to be there, and then we claim we're too busy to take care of the most important things that we have been entrusted with by God. Some parents are living in denial. They just simply think, I can't be a bad parent. I just don't think I am, so therefore I can't be. Or they have convinced themselves that they are good parents, and yet their children, by observation, are without discipline. They have little respect for adults. They have little reverence for God. They have a poor work ethic. In other words, the evidence simply does not support the claim. So once again, you can be a good parent in your own mind and still be a very bad parent in reality. Your opinion, with all due respect, really doesn't change the situation. Some Christian parents confuse doting on their child with effective parenting. They think something like, well, since I spend so much time on or with my child, I must be a good parent. And yet you should know that parenting is not measured only in the quantity of attention, but also the quality and the substance of that attention. More to say on that in later lessons. Some parents simply do not actively teach their children about God or Jesus or the Bible at home. They leave all that teaching to Bible classes or sermons or passive education. In other words, hopefully the kids just pick up some good things in the midst of everything else they're hearing. And some Christian parents place more value on gifts and toys and material wealth for their children than they do the true and lasting wealth of a well-rounded spiritual education that will last into eternity. So let me go back to my point here. Sometimes it is true that the church of tomorrow is being groomed in the households of Christians today, and sometimes it is not. And I've given you some good reasons why it's not. Things that can be changed. All of these things can be changed, and they should be changed. And hopefully if any of us are guilty of those things, we are in the mindset now that this change is good, I want to do this, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to make it happen. Parents need to provide their children with a set of values, a sense of right and wrong, a basis for spiritual convictions, development of their critical thinking, and life skills that will take them into adulthood. I want to put here as a tagline, this is not for amateurs, okay? I've always, you know, you've seen those little sayings, you know, retirement's not for amateurs, or growing old's not for amateurs, and I agree as far as what I've seen, but parenting is not for amateurs. Unfortunately, so many people are amateur-ish at parenting. Not because they can't learn, not because they don't have opportunity, it's just because they don't make the effort. So we don't want to be amateurs here. There's so much at stake. There's so much that needs to be done. There's so much responsibility involved. My observation, for what it's worth, is it is more difficult now in this day and age to be a young person than at any time in American history. I don't mean that the work, the physical work, is harder, because actually I think that's a lot easier. I think young people today work less physically than they've ever had to work in American history. What I'm referring to is that there is more moral confusion and pressure to conform to wicked things than there has ever been in this country in history. Not only do we have a culture that is becoming increasingly godless, as we talked about last week, but we have a culture that wants your children to be godless as well. In other words, we don't have just a passive situation going on. We have an antagonistic one. We have a culture, a society, a godless agenda that wants your children to conform to it, rather than just simply say, oh, you can just do whatever you want. We don't care about your children as long as we've got these over here. No, that's just not what's happening. There's a lot of pressure. Young people from grade school on up are facing moral, ethical, and sexual situations and sexual temptations and contempt for the Christian belief system and the assault of humanism and atheism like never we have seen before. We have never seen it to this level. We have never seen it like this, and it is rampant. And if it is difficult for our children to be young people in this society, then it is difficult for parents to be parents in this society. Christian parents, that is. It's a difficult thing. And I want to tell you that up front, that parents, you who are struggling with being a parent, and struggling with the issues of parenthood and struggling to keep your children on track, I understand that. I do. I've raised children recently myself, and I understand the pressure, and it's not getting easier. It's getting worse as time goes on. So we're not just getting up here and saying, oh, it's a piece of cake. There's no problem here. And then being very unrealistic about it. We're being very realistic about it. But that doesn't take away the responsibility either. It doesn't take away the need. We are facing things today as parents that are unprecedented, never even anticipated as early as 20 years ago. And what that means, though, is that parents cannot be less attentive to parenting, but need to be even more than ever attentive to what they're doing as parents. That doesn't mean they can spend less time teaching and coaching and preparing their children for the future to face this godless world, but even more time. It means they cannot be less knowledgeable about godly instructions and godly principles, but even more so. What I'm saying here is it's not a time to let up. It's a time to buckle down. It's a time to be really serious about this. Thankfully, you're not alone. First of all, we have the Word of God as a prescription for life. Not just for your children's life, but for your life too, because your life serves as an example for your children's life. And secondly, we have a congregation of people who want both you and your children to succeed. That's a powerful resource there. We're not just sitting here, you know, crossing our fingers going, I hope that does well, you know, all your efforts there. But we're praying for you and we're supportive of you and we're supporting your children too. We also want to recognize that we have the most powerful resource imaginable, and that is God himself. We are not praying hopeless, useless prayers. We are praying to a God that can help people and that can heal people and that can do things. Parents ought to be praying and praying often for their children's moral, emotional, and spiritual well-being, for divine protection against wickedness, for praying from protection from those who would lead their children astray, and praying that their children would choose life. And the only life worth choosing is a life with God. We, the congregation, whether we have children or not, we ought to be praying for the generations that are coming up. We're told in James 5:16 that the effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much. Well, that bears upon us then who pray to think and believe and live righteously so that our prayers will actually be heard by God and responded to by him. It goes without saying that children are a gift from God. We're even told that in Psalm 127, verse 3, just very bluntly, children are a gift of the Lord. You do not own your children. You are a guardian of them. It's a solemn stewardship. God has not given you children so that you can feel fulfilled. He has not given you children so that you can relive your childhood all over again. He's not given you children just so that you can cuddle up to them and dress them up and take pictures of them and post it on Facebook. If there's one group of people that I would love to remove from my Facebook, it's children, grandchildren, and then pets, and then what after that? You know, something along that line. It just, if I could take that group out, my Facebook would just implode with a vacuum there, because everyone's posting everything about their kids, right? And I know that when I have grandkids, I will not post any pictures of my grandkids. But my whole point here is it's not about you. It's not about you. God has given you children, and you should feel very blessed and honored for that responsibility. But those children are souls that God has given you to lead in a certain direction. And that's a very solemn responsibility. He's put souls in your care for a time. That is very serious business. And he's given you those souls so that they will learn to be loved unconditionally like God loves you. And so that you will learn to love unconditionally like God loves you. There's a really powerful experience there that can be shared between the parents and their children so that they will also have an opportunity to learn about God. What better way than in a Christian environment in the home? If you are a child who is brought up in a Christian home, a home where the parents are Christians and that the environment is Christ-centered, you are blessed more than you realize. You are so blessed. You have got so much to your advantage there. That was not by accident. That was a situation that God provided for you. You should take that to heart. You can. God has given you children so that you can protect them from debilitating harm, from lies and deception, from being overwhelmed by doubt and fear, from straying from the narrow way, from losing their souls as adults. God has given you these children to prepare them for eternity. You get first dibs, so to speak. You get first rights there. You get the first opportunity to teach them. And God has given you children so that you can better appreciate what God goes through in dealing with you and how you disappoint him and how you break his heart and how you rebel against him and also how you make him proud, how you honor him, and how he desires your fellowship, because you as a parent are going to experience all of those things with your children if you haven't already yet. And so you can lead them to Christ. That would be the primary reason there, is so that you can lead these children in due time when they are of age to Christ. Don't just take them to church. Take them to the Lord. Lead them to Christ. That's a supreme objective. Now let's talk about the family itself and more specifically on parenting roles here. The family is a microcosm of society. It is a group of people that needs to be governed toward a specific goal and with a specific purpose. It is a group that requires planning. It is a responsibility that requires leadership and staying focused, and it requires discipline, both proactive, which is referring to structure and stability and basically law and order, as well as corrective discipline, which means when someone gets off of that path, they need to be brought back, and yes, even punitive, and I think we all know what that means, okay? So this is a daunting but fascinating responsibility. And here's the point that I'm making with this lesson. The godless world has no right to lead your children. And the church has really no business leading your children by itself. And the children do not have the knowledge and life experience and ability to lead themselves or the family. So who's left? It's the parents' responsibility to lead the family, to lead the children. It is the parents' responsibility. And what that means then is that parents need to be leaders. If it's your responsibility to lead, well, then you've got to recognize your role then as that of a leader. And a leader, by our succinct definition here, is one who knows the way to go, one who goes that way himself or herself, and one who also actively inspires others to follow him or her. You inspire your children to follow. You don't just passively hope that they'll follow. You actually encourage and inspire them to follow you. Good leaders are those who serve others. Matthew 20, verse 26, 27, Jesus talks about that great men in the world laud upon themselves their greatness. He says, if you want to be great in God's eyes, then be a servant to others. John chapter 13, verse 14 and 15, Jesus tells the disciples that I am a servant to you, and as I have done to you, then you should do to others. As a parent, you need to learn how to serve your family without becoming a slave to their wants, to their whims, and to their pleasures. Be a servant. Don't just become a slave. And I'm using those words specifically here. Good leaders are teachable. They are not know-it-alls or resistant to change. God wants you to be teachable. Now, 3 John, verse 9, John says, I wrote something to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first among them, does not accept what we say. Here's a man who refuses to be taught. That is not a good thing. If your family is young, and yet you think you've got this, and you have no idea, however, what lies ahead, that is not a good place to be, to think that you've got this. If you think that you've already mastered that which you don't even know, well, that's just not a good, wise position to be in. You would do well to listen, to take to heart, rather than closing your mind. We have just talked in the men's get-together here the last couple weeks. The refusal to be taught leads to refusing to change, leads to refusing to grow or to grow up, and refusing to mature, and refusing to improve. That is just not biblical. That is not Christian. That is not what Christ has taught us. He has taught us just the opposite of that. So if you want your children to be teachable, then you've got to be teachable yourself, is really what we're saying. As if you want your children to be servants, well, then you serve and show them the example. Good leaders are honest and just because they care about law, and especially God's laws. They care about character. They care about integrity. They are genuine through and through, not just superficially, not just now and then, and not just when they're at church. A lot of children can probably look at their parents and say, yeah, mom and dad, they're all right and good and wonderful people when they're at church, but you should see them when they're at home. I have heard kids talk like that. And I've heard kids talk like that when they're teenagers and even into their 20s and 30s, and they're still angry and really bitter about that. I'm not saying they have a right to carry that bitterness into adulthood. What I'm saying is that that was the impact that it left upon those kids. So if you're going to be a righteous, pious, reverent person here, well then good, you should be, but you should also be that way at home. And if you're not, the kids are going to see that. You need to be honorable. You need to be just. You need to care about God and His law. Good leaders are kind and hospitable. They care about the welfare of others. They're willing to put themselves out to help someone else in need. They are more concerned with giving than they are with receiving. In Acts 20, verse 35, Jesus said, through the words of Paul there, it is more blessed to give than to receive. So what kind of kids do you want to have? Do you want to have kids that are kind and hospitable? You have to be kind and hospitable first. You have to show them. By your leadership, you will train them. By what you do, they will see it, and that will be more powerful than all the sermons that we could offer here. Good leaders have happy, well-adjusted, and realistic families. Their marriage and their family does not just exist in some chaotic, dysfunctional way, but it is functional, it is productive, it is able to handle even difficult crises when they come. Left to the children, or if you're letting your children run the family and be the leaders in your family, which a lot of parents do because, well, it just seems to be easier that way, children are not capable of dealing with difficult situations. They can't even manage good situations because they're just not mature enough to do that. They might think they are, you might think they are, but that doesn't mean that they really are. Okay? You're a parent because you're an adult and because God has entrusted you with values and responsibilities and experiences already that the children do not have. So take all of that to heart there. When we give the leadership of the family to those who are incapable of fulfilling it, that is a recipe for disaster. And that's why a lot of homes are disastrous, morally and spiritually, is simply because the parents have abdicated that responsibility to someone else, either, whether the children or the schools or the family members or someone else. And it doesn't have to be that way, and it should never have been that way. I want to be more specific here when we talk about leader. We're going to talk about dad. I'm not talking about my dad or yours, but just dad as a role here. Dad has to be a leader, not just a figurehead or just the breadwinner or just, as some parents say, the heavy, right? Okay, I realize dad is the heavy sometimes, but that's not his primary or only role. Children need to be taught then to respect dad's position as one of that of a God-given authority. In other words, God has entrusted fathers with a solemn responsibility. They need to be respected for that responsibility. And you'll hear it keep bubbling up in our lesson even today. I took that very seriously as a father. I taught my children since they were young. Now, I have two objectives. You've heard this many times. I'll tell you again that my job as a parent is to train you how to be a good citizen and also a faithful Christian. And so that was my resolve. That was our resolve as parents there to teach our children that way. And so we had some objectives in mind. That gets to my next point, is that dad has to have objectives. In other words, what is he leading his children to? For what reason? And how is this going to happen? You know, what manner and so on? There has to be an objective. You can't just say, well, I'm going to train my children how to be good citizens and faithful Christians and not have a game plan and not have anything implemented that actually takes them there. You can't just hope that this is going to happen because you're going to will it into existence because you're just a good parent. That's just not good enough. And by the way, that's just your opinion. when there's no evidence to support it. Remember, we've talked about this. So dad needs to have an objective. If you want your children to follow God and follow Christ, excellent. You've got to have a plan to bring them there and to make that happen. And you need to set the example, dad. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 2 and 3, I realize this deals with elders, but there's a principle here that does deal with fathers in general. The elders are to be those who are exercising oversight of the church, that is, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, not for sordid or illicit gain, but with eagerness, nor is lording it over those allotted to their charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. I think this describes a good, sound Christian dad at home. He's not the lorded over his family. I'm the dad. When I say jump, you ask, how high? You know, or something like that. Or, you know, I'm the dad and I don't care about you or your feelings and I'm all here for the profit. I'm all here for what I get out of it. It's all about me. No, that's not what you see here. You see a dad who recognizes that he is the shepherd and his family is the flock, his children, that is, and that he is the responsible character, the responsible member of that family to that flock. And that requires something of him. And he sets the example by his own behavior and his own conduct in the family. He needs to submit to God in order to lead the family. It's a really powerful statement. He needs to submit to God in order to lead the family. No man is a spiritually competent leader who refuses divine instruction or ignores biblical teaching. He might think he's a great man. He might think he's a good dad. And he might be when it comes to playing soccer and, you know, going to the park, but he is not a good man in God's sight. Mom also has to be a leader. I know this scares someone when I say this because we're quick to say, not equal to dad, so I just put it up there. Mom's role is not equal to dad's, but she is not an inferior adult either, and that's something very important. Mom must never be treated like one of the children, and quite frankly, she must not act like one of the children either. I say that because there's some moms who think that they're being submissive when the fact is they're simply acting like the children in the family. And that's not submission, not in the role of a wife. You are a partner with your husband in parenting these children that you've brought into the world. You're not asking permission, therefore, to do the same things that the children do. You're not given the same limitations as the children. You need to be honored as a mother and a wife, and yet you need to also act honorably in that role. In her husband's absence, mom's words should be just as binding as dad's, and the children need to be taught to obey her equally. As far as the children are concerned, both are equally in charge. And when I say that, I say from the children's perspective, not robbing anything from dad's authority, not talking about usurping authority or anything else. A reason I put this point in here is because I've watched for the last 30 years a number of Christian moms who have really told their children, well, I am not going to do anything. Wait till your dad gets home, you know, that kind of thing, and really abdicating her responsibility as an authority figure in the home. The kids pick up on this very quickly and use it to their advantage. They're very smart about this, especially how to play mom against dad and vice versa. She needs, mom needs, support for her husband, but also support of her husband. She needs to support his plan for the family and to support his leadership. The reason I bring this up is because I have heard so many times and have seen it firsthand where moms will belittle their husbands behind their children's, behind his back to the children, they're rolling their eyes and kind of whispering to their children, your father is such an idiot sometimes, or, you know, your father can't seem to do anything right, or something like that. What have you just taught your children? What you've taught your children when you do that, moms, if indeed anyone's here that's done that, you've taught your children it's okay to disrespect dad. It's okay because he's probably an inept leader anyway, and the real powerhouse here is me, and I know what's best, and I'll go to dad later on and talk sense into him. That's what you've taught your children. Which, by the way, if you watch just about any commercial on TV, that's exactly what you see. The mom is all-wise, all-knowing, the best shopper in the world, knows how to find a bargain, even in the most desperate situation, and the dad is a klutz. He's just bumbling through life. You know, he has no idea. Oh, what's this laundry detergent do? You know, and he's just an idiot. And that's exactly how society is portraying our husbands and our fathers as bumbling idiots. Well, yeah, they can go to work somehow, but they can't do anything at home because that is mom's territory. You know who perpetuates that myth? Is the moms and our feministic society and our demasculinized society. That's what's perpetuating all that. Mom is not to usurp or override dad's authority in his absence. I know daddy said no candy, but here, it'll be our little secret. What did you just do? Dad laid down the law, said no candy. You went behind his back, undermined his law, his rule, his objective there, and just made his law, his rule, his directive look like it doesn't really matter. And that's really critical to, critical in a bad way here, to the dad's role as a leader of his family. Here's what a mom should say when the child says, yeah, but dad said no, but, you know, what do you say? And the mom should say, what did your father say? It's not going to be any different with me. I support his decision and you are expected to honor it. That's what a mom should be saying. It's not going to be any different. Whatever dad said, that's what we're doing. You need to honor that because I'm honoring that. Mom needs to be a parent. Mom needs to be a parent and not allow her children to walk all over her, run the house, set the pace. It is amazing to me. I see this all the time in all kinds of different contexts. Intelligent 20 or 30-something moms being manipulated by a 2 or 3-year-old toddler. I just am amazed by that. And yet it happens so frequently. Spend an hour with me in Starbucks sometime and I'll show you. I will point it out. It is everywhere. It is rampant. And sadly, it is also happening even among our Christian families. God is expecting you, mom and dads, to be parents, not just biological figureheads and not just an ATM for teens. Okay, so what that means then is that you have to give direction to your children versus the other way around, or versus deciding their own direction regardless of you. Here's the thing, if you have on the screen, if you don't lead your kids, they will most certainly lead you. So you've got to always have the upper hand. You've got to stay one step ahead. That's going to require a little diligence on your part, maybe a little bit of homework. Because children leading your home and leading you is entirely backward from what God expects. They're not qualified to lead, even though they will tell you they are and will think that they are. They are not qualified to lead. Parenting is not a joint effort between you and your children, even if your children are teenagers. If they're living under your roof, then they need to respect your authority. It is a responsibility of parents to lead their children, not a joint effort where you sit down with your kids and say, hey, how would you like to be led? What can we do to better lead you? You know, if you're doing that, then just stop it right now. That's just not what you should be doing. Your parents. Go to other parents, especially older, wiser, seasoned parents who know what they're talking about. Learn from them and then carry that instruction back and say, kids, this is what we're going to do. But don't sit there and negotiate with your children as to how you are going to be the leader. That is not what you're being told to do. All of this is not because you want to be a tyrannical ogre to your children, although they might think that. It is quite the opposite. You want them, once again, to grow up to be good citizens and faithful Christians. And it is critical to this end that you hold fast God's description for parents, which is really God's role over all of us. We're modeling ourselves as parents after God's role for us. Colossians 3:20, which I was going to throw into the next lesson, but I'll just read it to you up front. Children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Colossians 3, verse 20. Well, why is it well-pleasing to the Lord? Because that's what the Lord does himself for us. He is a model parent, and he wants us to be obedient, our children to be obedient to parents, and because that is something that he wants us to be obedient to him. And that means that you must make decisions for your children, especially when they're young, rather than let them make them for you. I have observed And I continue to observe children making decisions for the entire family as to what to do, what movie to watch, what to eat for dinner, what restaurant to go to, where are we going to sit when we get to the restaurant, what are we going to order, what are we going to buy, what are we not going to buy? Daddy, it's time to leave. Oh, we got to leave because Susie's, you know, wanting to leave. I want to go home. I don't want to go to bed. You're letting your children make all of these decisions. Well, it doesn't take the kids long to figure out when given such latitude that they're really the ones in charge and not the parents. And guess what? They're not capable of that. They're not capable of handling that responsibly. It's always going to degenerate to a very self-serving interest because children are selfish by nature. That's not an immoral thing in itself. It's just, you know, it's a factual thing. And you're there as a parent to train them not to be that way. And so you've got to take charge. What that means then is do not ask your children what they want. Just simply tell them what they need. Don't let them redefine your decisions to accommodate their preference, their schedule, or their social life. For example, just a silly example, but very serious point. Jimmy, I want you to sit here until I tell you to get up. And Jimmy says, but I just want to stand over here instead and do this. And the parent says, okay, but stay there until, well, what just happened there? Mom or dad just laid down the rule, said, you're going to do this, and Jimmy came back with a negotiable offer. Right? This is a negotiable offer. You put your proposal out here. Here's my counter proposal, right? Because basically I'm equal in authority. We're just two people trying to barter or negotiate a deal here. And then you agreed to his proposal and went, you know what? That's a good deal. I think we'll go with that one. What did you just do? You just gave away your responsibility as a parent. You gave it to this little child. Now, you might not have thought of that at the time, but that's exactly what you did, and that's exactly what you should not do. You made the child made the decision, and you, the parent, conformed to it. And the more that you do this, the more that anyone does this in that leadership role, you become less credible and less effective, and the child becomes more manipulative and more daring over time. They are not learning to obey you. They are learning to play you. That's a big thing going on right now. Kids learning how to play their parents rather than to obey them. Here's the thing. If you cannot control a five-year-old, what makes you think you're going to control that five-year-old when he or she is 15 years old? If you can't get it down when they're young, you're not prepared for when they get older. And if a five-year-old can skillfully play his parents, then imagine what a 15-year-old can do who's had another 10 years of experience playing his or her parents. Just think where that's going. Remember what we started with in the beginning? Parents are to define the generation to come. Here is a family that I'm describing that is being defined by poor parenting. You know what you're creating. You're creating a selfish, self-serving, self-centered, hedonistic monster in the future. But you think you're a good parent if you don't do bad things and you constantly cater to your children. You think you're a good parent. Well, then be a parent. Is really what we're saying. Do not put your instructions in the form of a question, turning them into suggestions. Jimmy, can you put your coat on now? Jimmy, can you go use the potty now? Susie, do you think it's time for bed? Susie, can you maybe go put your pajamas on now? Jimmy, would you like to come back to the table and finish your dinner? Can you please stop hitting mommy? That's always a classic one. Can you please not spray paint the dog? Can you stop lighting the furniture on fire, please? Can you insert instruction? Can you do that okay? And when you do that, when you have this question mark and okay, what you're really saying there, is that agreeable to you? You're allowing the children an option to say, you know what? I think I will do this, or I think I won't do that. You're giving the child the option to say yay or nay, when in fact that is not their right. That is not their place. That is not your role to give them that option. You should be telling them what you need to do. Ecclesiastes 10, verse 16 says, woe to you, O land, whose king is a lad. In other words, children were not meant to rule. They were not meant to be given authority. Households that allow this bring sorrow and heartache on themselves and add to the delinquency of our already godless society. So you must hold to your decisions rather than let your children change your mind through persistence, through whining, temper tantrums, batting of the eyes, or kissing up, or whatever else. Be a parent. Because the children will come back, and they are very good, even at a very early age, at playing parents against each other or taking advantage of your weakness or your tiredness or your inattention to details. They will do their best to wear you down. They're very good at this. Kids are in their mind going, you know, I am really good at this. You need to be the parent, even when you're tired. Even when you're busy with projects, even when you're dealing with difficult situations, even when you'd rather be watching TV, you can't just abdicate your role because it's inconvenient or because it's uncomfortable or because you're getting into new territory, because you're always going to be getting into new territory. You have to make decisions that are right, that are in the best interest of the family, not just those that are popular, convenient, or choose the path of least resistance. Part of being a parent is making decisions that are right and in the best interest of the family. In that vein, it is okay to say no or wait, because God does this all the time to those who pray to him. We had a passage read, 2 Corinthians chapter 12, particularly verse 8 and 9. Paul is imploring God three times, take this thorn in the flesh away from me. God said, in essence, no, and do not ask me again. That was God's answer. And Paul went, yeah, but I want it. I really want it. And then he rolled his eyes and, you know, tears, and there was a temper tantrum and, you know, and threw something. And what did Paul do? He said, you know what? God knows best what is best for me, and this is what his answer is to me, and I'm going to glory in that. I'm going to trust God. Now, I'm not saying kids are going to react that way. I'm saying that it, regardless of how kids act, you should understand that you're acting in what is right, and you're acting in their best interest. You don't have to ask their opinion on the matter. Revelation chapter 6, verse 10, we have this visionary scene of the saints at the altar there, and these are martyrs who have given their lives for the faith, and they're telling God, do something to avenge our blood. And God says, I will, but not yet. We're going to operate on my schedule, not yours. And that sets a precedent. And I know what parents will do. A lot of parents, I've heard them say this. They say, well, I feel so guilty denying my child. Why should you feel guilty for doing what's right and what is in their best interest? You should not feel guilty for that because you haven't done anything wrong. Guilt is for wrongdoing. If you feel guilty for something that's not wrong, well, then that's just your opinion. But you shouldn't feel that way at all. Raising children is not like raising crops or animals. They need your constant vigilance. They need regular attention. They need nurturing. They need to be praised. They need to be corrected. They need you to teach them. They don't just need you to feed and clothe them. They need to understand right from wrong and good from evil. They need you, parents, as a mainstay in their lives. They need you to lead them. Your children, as you know, are intelligent human beings, but do not confuse intelligence with self-guided or not in need of oversight. A very bright 8-year-old, for example, is still 8 years old. He may be precocious and ahead of his class and, you know, an advanced drawing or whatever, but he still lacks maturity and experience and judgment and historical perspective, and therefore needs you to be a parent and not just a mere older family member. He needs you to do your job. And how you live and can talk and conduct yourself and the attitudes that you exhibit at home, that becomes powerful life lessons, whether good or bad. Depending on how you handle yourself, good or bad, positive or negative, for your children. So we're saying here, it's not enough that you want your children to go to heaven and be good people. You have to see yourself as one who steers them in that direction, steers them that way. Not just hopes and crosses their fingers, maybe just says a few prayers, but steers them that way. If you do not steer your children, someone else will, but it will not necessarily be the direction that you want them to go. God gave you your child or children for good reason. He has a plan for you. He expects you to take this seriously. He expects you to comply with this. Those who do this bring great honor to God. So, we have done something here. We have given some concepts, and then we've given some practical application. What you do with all this information is up to you. There are guiding principles here that go well beyond parenting. There are things here for everybody. And I hope that you all take this seriously, as I take it seriously myself. If there's anyone here that is prepared to obey the gospel, we certainly want to end our lesson with that invitation, that you would come forward and be baptized into Christ, if indeed that is what you want to do, and if that you're prepared to do that. We want to pray for you. We want to help you. We want to encourage you. We want what's best for you. But we also need you to take personal responsibility for your life. And so we appeal to God, and we also appeal to your sense of responsibility. Do what you need to do as we stand and sing the song Richard has selected.